not duck the tough issues, we will lead. We will not spend the next 4 years blaming others. We will take responsibility. We will not try to replace our founding principles. We will reapply our founding principles.
That's Representative Paul Ryan accepting the Republican nomination for vice president last night. We're joined now by The Washington Post's Jonathan Capehart. Welcome back, Jonathan.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
What were your first impressions of the address?
Well, I thought for the purposes of the folks in the hall, Congressman Ryan did what he needed to do. He gave them red meat. He took the argument right to the president, which is what a lot of the folks in the room have wanted their nominees to do, to take the argument directly to the president, not be elliptical in their arguments, but go right after him. And I think Paul Ryan did that successfully. What he didn't do successfully is get his facts straight. But it's pretty clear, given that a lot of the things he said last night are things he's been saying on the campaign trail and that Governor Romney has been saying on the campaign trail, it's clear that they don't quite care what the fact checkers have to say.
In fact, one of his advisors actually made that very statement. But so given the fact that these conventions are essentially commercials for each party, shouldn't we expect a certain amount of fact-bending?
Of course. You know, these conventions are scripted affairs, right down to the hand-waving and the pauses for applause in the speeches. They're trying to make the best argument they can with the facts as they have them and as they interpret them. I'm looking forward to Charlotte, but right now here in Tampa, that speech was for the folks in the base of the Republican Party. And I'll be curious to see in Charlotte just how much the Democrats push really hard to have their speeches and their tone and their what they have to say geared to the Democratic Party base. I don't know if there's I'm hard-pressed to find anything within Congressman Ryan's speech that would appeal to moderates, that would appeal to the vast middle, people who are looking for compromise to solve the country's problems and not a knockdown, drag-out fight to see who ultimately wins the battle of ideas as opposed to compromising to get something done.
It was a Romney pollster who said at a panel organized by ABC News that we're not going to let our campaign be dictated by fact checkers. So do pollsters know that these things don't really have much of an impact? Facts, I mean?
You mean the fact checking, that they don't have much of an impact? When I read that quote from the Romney advisor, it's very curious. I mean, they are running a campaign clearly on messages and themes that have worked in focus groups. Whether the statements are truthful or not, the Romney campaign can ignore the fact checkers, but we as journalists have an obligation, not just to ourselves, but to our readers and our viewers, to tell them that what they're being told by the campaigns, by the candidates, by their surrogates, whether those things are true, kind of true, not really true, and flat out false.
Well, Paul Ryan gave the delegates red meat, but the two speakers who preceded him were Condoleezza Rice, who gave a speech aimed as much at swing voters as the people in the hall, and then New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez talked about her switch from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party.
Right, and to me, Leonard, those two speeches were the terrific speeches of the night. Governor Martinez and Secretary Rice, I viewed them both as very confident and sure personalities and speakers, but with Secretary Rice being a very professorial, very stateswoman-like presence and presentation, and with Governor Martinez as a more folksy, fiery, sassy, if you will, articulator of her view of where she is in this party and what it means to her and how that fits into the overall American story. but they weren't exactly in prime time. I mean, they led up to the big, well, they were in prime time, but they led up to the big speech. And I think, quite frankly, their speeches plus speeches earlier in the week, for instance, Mia Love, what we're looking at is the future of the Republican Party. And so they have the opportunity to sort of lay down markers to let people know, yes, we're Republicans and we're conservative, but we have views that aren't as scary and hard-edged as you're going to hear from Paul Ryan and possibly Mitt Romney tonight.
Weren't they also intended to counteract the criticism that there's a Republican war on women? They highlighted a number of prominent women in the party.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. And, you know, luckily for the Republican Party, they have prominent women in their party who can, you know, take the podium and speak. But the Democrats are doing the same thing. Last week, they released a whole roster of women speakers who will be taking to the podium in Charlotte.
So, including a nun.
Right. Including one of the nuns who's taking on the Catholic Church. But, you know, women voters are a very, very important voting bloc for both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And, you know, both parties have made it clear through their, at least through their speakers who's speaking at their conventions, they've made it clear that they are not taking the women's vote for granted.
My guest is Jonathan Capehart of The Washington Post, MSNBC, sometimes even WNYC. And this is WNYC. I'm Leonard Lopate. We're talking to Mr. Capehart from Tampa. Ryan talked a lot about the economy and job creators. Did you pick up any specifics about how he and Mitt Romney proposed to strengthen the economy?
I did not. A lot of Congressman Ryan's speech was about what President Obama and his administration have done wrong and what they've done to hold back economic growth. The one nugget that stood out for me from Congressman Ryan's speech was that, you know, he would hold federal spending to 20% of GDP, which, you know, a lot of fact checkers, which I know the Romney campaign doesn't want to listen to, and independent economists have reported that, you know, that's kind of a difficult thing to do without completely eviscerating programs and eviscerating the government. When Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan sat down for their interview, I believe it was with Bob Schieffer at 60 Minutes, and the whole focus was on the fact that Paul Ryan had this budget, had this plan, and how do they reconcile their two approaches to the economy? And Mitt Romney said, well, I have my plan, and I will be coming out with my plan in the in the coming days. Well, we haven't seen that budget plan. And a lot of the criticism of Mitt Romney, even before he picked Paul Ryan, was that he's made all of these promises and said all of these things that he kind of wants to do, but he hasn't given anyone any details so that we can figure out, okay, will this really work? Will this really reduce the deficit? Will this really create jobs and gin up the economy to the point where we can get out of 8% unemployment? Paul Ryan's budget, we know all about it. We know how severe it is. We know it doesn't balance the budget until the 2030s. But Mitt Romney is the top of the ticket. And still, right now, we don't know what Mitt Romney, the Republican presidential nominee, we don't know what his budget would look like.
Well, Paul Ryan charged headfirst into the debate over Medicare, claiming that President Obama funneled $716 billion out of the program, and he pledged that a Romney administration would honor Medicare. But doesn't the Ryan plan involve a partial privatization of the program through vouchers?
Yes. I mean, the Ryan plan would end Medicare as we know it. It would turn the program into a voucher program. And this notion that the Obama administration is, quote, raiding the program of $700-something billion is just, it's flat out untrue. But also, in the Ryan budget, that Congressman Ryan was lauded over, he too takes into account the 700 something billion dollar savings from Medicare in his own plan. So he's doing a bit of doublespeak there.
Well, how did the president cut Medicare funding?
Well, what he does is, you know, through the classic cutting back on waste, fraud, and abuse, and redirecting the money saved it back into other other aspects of Medicare and the Affordable Care Act. So it's not like what the president is doing is taking money from Medicare and funneling it over to other government programs that don't benefit seniors and retirees. He's taking that money and using it to actually prolong the life of Medicare.
Now, Ryan also said that President Obama hasn't assumed responsibility for the lousy economy. He said that it's time to stop blaming President Bush for the economic mess that Obama inherited because Obama has failed to clean it up, and he's had 4 years to do that.
Yeah, well, the problem with that statement, one, people want to know why things are so bad, and then it's the responsibility of the president to tell them, here are the drags on the economy that are making it difficult for us to get the economy moving again and to put people back to work. The second thing, and I think the most egregious thing here, is that there are now two books out, one by Robert Draper, the other one by Michael Grunwald, both chronicling the fact that after President Obama's election, but before his inauguration, and in the case of Robert Draper's book, the night of his inauguration, the Republican leadership and other members of Congress met and decided that no matter what President Obama proposed, no matter what he tried to do, that they were going to oppose him, no matter what. And so when Republicans accuse the president of failure, when the Republicans accuse the president of not living up to his promises to the country, they are complicit in the very failure they're blaming the president for.
And and that comes up in the discussion about Simpson Bowles. Mr. Ryan spoke about it. Let's take a listen to what he said.
He created a new bipartisan debt commission. They came back with an urgent report. He thanked them, sent them on their way, and then did exactly nothing.
Didn't Ryan vote against the commission's recommendations?
Yes. Yes, he voted against it. He was part of it. It's sort of willful ignorance on his part, or willful amnesia on his part, and I'm thinking that he's hoping on the part of the American people to forget his role and the Republican Party's role in holding back efforts by the president to help the economy and help put people back to work. Simpson Bowles is one example. The American Jobs Act is another example, where the president sent to Congress last year, September 2011, a jobs bill, the very first bill he'd ever sent to Congress, hoping that Congress would do something, put people back to work. They shut it down. They didn't do anything about it. Republicans can blame President Obama all they want as the one person solely responsible for the calamity facing millions of Americans, but they are equal partners in whatever failure they're accusing the president of.
Both Mr. Ryan and Mike Huckabee mentioned that they went to different churches than Mitt Romney and that was okay. How much unease is there still among evangelical Christians about Mitt Romney's Mormon faith?
Well, I don't know for a fact that there is unease. I mean, I think it's safe to assume that there is. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a need to mention it so often. But I do think that Governor Romney has to at some point talk about his faith, not because it's necessary to make people feel comfortable about having a Mormon in the White House, but because for the governor to talk about his faith is to let people in to what many people say is something that's very fundamental and important and essential to his life and to himself as a person. It's very much a part of his identity. It's very much a part of who he is. And, you know, when you try to deny or you try to hold back things about yourself that are, you know, fundamental to you, you come off as inauthentic contrived and cold. And people have been trying very hard to, you know, push aside the fact that Mitt Romney isn't a likable guy. But I have to wonder if the governor would allow himself to talk about who he is, to talk about his Mormon faith, to talk about the fact that, yeah, he is a wealthy man and he's done well, and to talk about the fact that he was governor of Massachusetts and he did do good things as a moderate governor of Massachusetts, that we would probably see, maybe see a Mitt Romney that folks in the hall could actually stand up and cheer for, not out of obligation, but out of enthusiasm. And I have to tell you, Leonard, being in this hall, the enthusiasm here is really, really wanting. Folks are not, you can just feel it, they're not terribly enthused or enthusiastic about Mitt Romney. Other folks, Paul Ryan, Mike Huckabee, Mia Love, Susana Hernandez, Condi Rice, all those folks get raving ovations and cheers and applause. Tonight, it's going to be Mitt Romney's opportunity, and we'll see if he's able to get the same kind of reaction and enthusiasm that, say, Paul Ryan or even Condi Rice got last night.
Well, to some degree, you're suggesting that he try the same strategy that Obama did during the 2008 campaign when he addressed the whole race issue. So looking ahead to tonight, have there been any leaks? Do we have any idea what's going to be in Mitt Romney's speech? Will he be will he be talking a lot about Chris Christie, do you think?
No, I think for once, finally, we are going to have a speaker who's going to spend more time talking about Mitt Romney than talking about anyone else. We won't find out what's in Governor Romney's speech until maybe a few minutes before when the campaign, or maybe a few hours before when we might get excerpts of the speech before he gives it. But I think we're all going to be waiting to see just how far Mitt Romney goes in terms of putting specifics on the policies that he's proposed, how far Mitt Romney goes in letting us into, you know, his world and who he is. We're all very curious about it. We're all very curious about what Mitt Romney is going to say and how it will be received by people sitting in the Tampa Bay Times Forum.
Thank you so much for talking with us again, Jonathan Capehart of The Washington Post and MSNBC.
Pleasure.